The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Glory to you, O Lord. The Pharisees went away to work out between them how to trap Jesus in what he said. And they sent the disciples to him, together with the Herodians, to say, "Master, we know that you are an honest man and teach the way of God in an honest way, and that you are not afraid of anyone, because a man's rank means nothing to you. Tell us your opinion then. Is it permissible to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus was aware of their malice and replied, "You hypocrites, why do you set this trap for me? Let me see the money you pay the tax with." They handed him a denarius, and he said, "Whose head is this? Whose name?" "Caesar's," they replied. He then said to them, "Very well, give back to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God." The Gospel of the Lord. It might come as a bit of a surprise, but the second reading we had is the oldest writing in the New Testament. It was before the Gospels were written, before any other of Paul's letters or anything else written. This was the first one that he wrote, and it's the oldest. He went there to Thessalonica in the year 50, which was a major city then, and the capital of Macedonia. It's still a city there today. But the point was, it shows us that the hope that fills people's hearts when they accept the message of Jesus Christ. The church there was under persecution, as of course, much like so many places today, where it's difficult, sometimes even dangerous, to be a Christian. You only need to read Aid to the Church in Need or the Catholic papers to see how many places just around the world where it's quite dangerous, life-threatening, to be a Christian. And there's a part of Nigeria, one diocese in Nigeria, where 200 churches have been just demolished or smashed through, violence and terrorism. You think that's like wiping out the whole of our diocese and maybe Clifton or Portsmouth. I know that, and that's quite a big area, but of course a lot of those African countries are huge. But nevertheless, you think if you've lost 200 churches or near enough that. So it's a reminder that that is the situation that can be. But despite that, that's why we read it, despite that, St. Paul tells us that the early Christians had great joy. This is the joy, he said, that comes from faith. And that's what Pope Francis has written about in Evangelii Gaudium. The joy of the gospel fills the hearts and lives of all who encounter Jesus. Those who accept his offer of salvation are set free from sin, sorrow, emptiness, and loneliness. With Christ, joy is constantly born anew. That's all from his encyclical. So, Church in Thessalonica, set up by St. Paul, one of the earliest Christian communities. But what happened as it grew, that through suffering it grew. And somebody said to me the only other day, what we need is an outbreak of persecution here. Well, of course, there is, in very different and subtle forms, a persecution always going on. But in the gospel, Jesus reminds us that while we're in this life, it's important to live in the midst of the world and support the activities of the state if they're compatible to Christian values, gospel values. But, he said, when they're in conflict, then we give what's right to the state, give to Caesar what's right to Caesar, but give to God what is right to God. And if there's a clash and they force it on us, as they did, I mean, the great example, Thomas More, little statue on the organ case there, St. Thomas More, who said, "I'm the king's good servant, but God's first." And if what God is asking of us is in collision there, that's the challenge for every Christian. And that's why they're just as relevant today as 2,000 years hearing of what St. Paul is speaking about. Because in our own times, the churches in parts of Africa, in Asia, are growing. Brand new churches are being built by missionaries all over the world. And the Catholic numbers are growing worldwide. But of course, the Western world is another matter. And that's why on World Mission Day, we're asked to pray and give what we can to support those churches who need our support to thrive. And the Holy Father assures us that if we look outside of our own concerns and beyond ourselves, great joy is our reward. Thanksgiving. That's what St. Paul, in the opening bit of that letter, that's, as I say, his first letter ever, was to thanksgiving. We give thanks to God, praying for you every day. And he's doing that because he's very conscious that the people are full of three things, the three great virtues, faith and hope and love. But the one that goes in the middle, the hope, is one that can often be neglected. We think about the faith of our fathers, we sang at the beginning, for that very good reason. We think about love, he speaks about the gospel, the joy of the gospel, bringing love, your envelope says about that love going on there. But hope can be the one that can be neglected. And that's why St. Paul gives it almost two meanings. He said, those with hope bear trials and persecution with perseverance. It's when we give up hope. It's when we do give up hope, then we lose everything we've got, don't we? One way and another. When there's no hope left, then there's nothing left. And that's why he speaks of that faith and that hope, and also as perseverance. As we know from the gospel, hope is not an easy optimism. It's the capacity to endure when whatever it is against us. When we're faced with whatever trials, we still hope. Now, in Paul's day, their biggest hope was that next week, even tomorrow, the Lord Jesus Christ would come. So hang on, it won't be long, the Lord will be back. It's something we've never lost, because in the Eucharistic prayer, in the acclamations, we always say, until you come again in glory. Looking forward always to the Lord coming. But in between whiles, if every Christian was to live that faith, that hope, and that love, then that's what keeps us going. And it's indeed what transforms the world. We live in a time of a lot of unbelief, and what Chesterton said was, when people stop believing in something, they believe in anything. And we see that all around. Commending the faith today in our own times, even in our own country, among our own families, among our neighbours, people that used to sit alongside us, the mass count isn't greatly encouraging. It's nice to see some of the children, but we know there's many more we now never see. And yet, we still should be full of hope and that faith and that love. Reminded them at the 11 last week, in my time here, I've buried nearly 200 of the Catholic community. Not all of them were here every week, of course, but a lot were. We can all look round, and we can all think of people that we used to see. Now, that's part of life. And we also go to at least 50 regularly with Holy Communion. There are others who are ill just at the moment that are additional, as it were, to that. That's over 50. That's 250 people out of a population. It's quite a size and not easily replaced. So we're reminded then of the serious situation here at home. And yet. It's not entertainment we're here for, it's salvation. It's the love that's shown us through God in Jesus, through Jesus, from God. God is love. And so he's asking us on World Mission Sunday to look at our own life, our own family life, the life of those around us that we know that used to be here. Ask ourselves as many questions. Why is it so hard to commend our faith today? And we can only do that. St. Paul mentions again in that reading to the Thessalonians through the power of the Spirit. That's our prayer, the power of the Spirit to enlighten our minds and encourage us in keeping that faith, having hope, and enduring in love.